Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. We're going to be visiting various parts of the battle space of the war for the free world, and no such tour is complete without a pit stop in Asia. When we do that, we always call upon Gordon Chang, our duty expert and that of Fox News, Forbes.com, World Affairs Journal, and other outlets. He is the author of The Coming Collapse of China. And Gordon, there has been an important new wrinkle in the U.S.-Chinese relationship, it would appear, a sanctioning of a major Chinese bank by the U.S. over its business dealings with Iran. What's going on, and what is the significance of this step?
Yeah, the United States has sanctioned Bank of Kunlun, which is a Chinese bank owned by a state oil company, and it was sanctioned under 2010 legislation. I think the administration did this because it was concerned about Romney's trip to Israel. And at the same time, the administration imposed new sanctions on Iran. This is important because the end of June, the Obama administration gave a waiver to China under 2011 sanctions legislation. And this 2011 issue is much more important because essentially what the Obama administration did was it gave a free pass to China, because China was supposedly reducing its purchases of Iranian oil. But in fact, China has been ramping up its purchases. And today, China purchases at least 54% of Iran's oil and therefore is a major supporter of the regime.
So if we give a waiver to the Chinese, despite this sanction that you've just mentioned, aren't we effectively undermining the whole enterprise of these sanctions and the pressure that they're intended to bring to bear on Iran to stop its nuclear weapons activities?
Absolutely, Frank, because the administration has given 20 waivers to countries for their oil dealings with Iran. And the idea is that these countries have been reducing their purchases, and in some cases that has indeed been true, but it really has not been true with China, which has essentially supported almost single-handedly the Iranian program. And you got to remember, this 54% figure probably understates China's purchases of Iran's oil, because Iran has been sending out surreptitious shipments of oil, reflagging carriers on the high seas, and China has been taking most of these reflagged shipments. So it really is a problem that the administration is not willing to confront.
Yeah, we've had a very interesting conversation with Claudia Rosette, who I know you know, Gordon Chang, one of our country's great investigative reporters, about this reflagging business and the extent to which it really has helped the Iranians circumvent these sanctions even further, especially with the connivance of the communist Chinese. Gordon, let me turn to another topic. China has been deploying its trade surplus increasingly in ways that I find quite worrying, specifically purchasing companies, some of them especially in the energy sector or in the technologies associated with the energy sector, that that may have real strategic significance. Tell me what your thoughts are about this Chinese buying binge, and particular, what you make of its strategic implications.
Beijing has been using its trade surpluses, which has been racked up through our really bad trade policies. But Beijing has been using these trade surpluses to buy companies in North America. And essentially what they're doing is trying to buy companies with technology. They're going to use this technology because they'll strip it out of the companies, and they will, in one way or another, employ it, which will hurt our trading relations with China. But also they'll use it for military purposes. So essentially what we have is a technology Easter egg hunt around the world, and we can do a lot to prevent this.
Yeah, an Easter egg hunt indeed. The question, I guess, is to stay with the egg metaphor, are we allowing the goose that lays the golden egg of our economy to be sold off? And Gordon, one of the parts of this that is particularly worrying is it comes at a moment when our investment in our own defense industry, that sector of our economy that is very much involved with obviously high technology, is declining. We're talking about possibly as many as a million jobs being liquidated as a result of what the administration is up to. We'll be talking more about that momentarily with a representative of the defense industrial sector. But to what extent, Gordon, should we be concerned that that this kind of vacuum cleaning of some of our most promising firms and technologies may be happening at the very moment that we're putting a lot of them on the block and making them unavailable for our defense purposes? And specifically, Gordon, if you'd speak to the point that we may therefore wind up relying on China, of all places, to an even greater degree than we are right now, to supply us with some critical national security components, technologies, pieces of equipment, and so on. A very dubious idea if we're going to face a possible confrontation with China in the future.
I couldn't agree with you more, Frank, because essentially the Chinese have been very good at bargain hunting. And because of the cutbacks in the defense, a lot of these defense contractors are going to see the values of their companies decline, and we could see the Chinese swoop in. Now, we have the tools to deal with this because we have all sorts of approval mechanisms, but they're only going to help us if we employ them, and that means we need to have the political will. We have to have the oversight necessary to stop acquisitions of critical U.S. technologies. The Chinese have done this in the past, gone in the North American market to look for companies with defense technologies. We've allowed them to buy these companies, and I think that that was wrong. So this is not just a Democratic or a Republican problem. This is bipartisan. There's been a bipartisan failure to protect our defense critical technologies.
Yeah. You know, Gordon, I this is a little bit of inside baseball, but I think it's important for our audience to understand this. One of the mechanisms that's used to evaluate these kinds of transactions, as you know, is this Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States, or CFIUS, as it's called. It's run by the Treasury Department. And by and large, the Treasury Department has never seen a foreign investment transaction that it didn't like. It's bringing money into the United States, or at least apparently so. And never mind that the technology is going to be hoovered away, and in some cases these companies simply left a hollow shell. But because those other equities, the Commerce Department's equities, the Defense Department's equities, State Department's equities, tend to be given relatively short shrift, many cases these CFIUS approvals are pretty much pro forma. And we wind up only really ruining the deal after it's been approved and the problems with it demonstrated. Gordon, let me just turn to one more topic before we have to let you go. Again, a bit of kind of inside baseball, but nobody understands what it means better than you as to what's going on inside the Chinese hierarchy. This rising star who was very hostile to us, Bo Zhilai, seems to have melted down. His wife is now being charged with murder. Is this a positive thing for us? Does it mark a significant change in direction for the Chinese, who he seemed to hope would be increasingly confrontational with us, or not?
Yeah, there was a factional infighting inside the Communist Party. None of these factions really liked the United States. And so, you know, Bo Zhilai probably was no worse than anybody else. What's going on, though, is important for the U.S. because as the civilians in the party fight, the military is breaking free of party control. And that means that we're seeing essentially uncoordinated policies from Beijing. And some of those policies are very belligerent, as we've seen in both the South China and the East China Seas recently. So this really brings the United States into play because we are the ultimate guarantor of peace and security in East Asia. So as the Communist Party leaders fight among themselves, including Bo Zhilai, what we're having is a much more hostile foreign policy, and much of that hostility is directed against the United States.
Yeah, and I fear no matter what happens to Bozhilai and his wife, that will continue to be the trajectory these guys are on. We will be following it closely with you, as always, Gordon Chang, and appreciate enormously your writings on these subjects at Forbes.com and WorldAffairsJournal.com, and also, of course, our weekly chats with you. I hope in our next one we'll have a chance to visit a little bit about the Law of the Sea Treaty and where that may stand and how, if at all, it bears on, as you say, the increasing belligerence of China in the South China Sea. But that's for another day. In the meantime, be well, my friend. It's great to talk with you, as always, and we'll look forward to doing so again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Jim Hansen. We'll get his take on what's happening from the boots-on-the-ground perspective in these and many other areas. Straight ahead.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was not nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by our friend and colleague Jim Hansen, the guy who brings what we think of as the boots on the ground perspective to the analysis and commentary that we provide here at Secure Freedom Radio. It is a perspective he earned the old-fashioned way by applying boots to the ground in the special forces of the United States Army. Specifically, he is a man now with a defense contractor by the name of Absio. He's also associated with the Warrior Legacy Foundation. And Jim, a lot to talk with you about, as usual. At the moment, the Obama administration has pushed out a report to the effect that they have really, really, really weakened Al-Qaeda. And as we've discussed off and on over the years, this pretty much single-minded focus on Al-Qaeda as though that's the only threat is kind of one problem with this analysis, when in fact there are so many others, as you know. But even with respect to the ground truth about Al-Qaeda, how do you see where we are in the effort to counter that particular manifestation of the Sharia-adherent threat?
Well, I think to the extent that the Obama administration has been very active in killing members of Al-Qaeda, those guys are totally weakened. They're dead. You know, they have assumed room temperature. So the guys who are dead are definitely weakened, and that obviously has a material effect on the overall effectiveness of Al-Qaeda. So to that extent, yes, they have made an impact. The problem is Al-Qaeda has never been a top-down, bureaucratic organization that you can have that big an effect on. It's been more of a franchise operation where any group of like-minded jihadis who decide that they want to, take it to the man and, run up the black flag with no God but Allah on it is an Al-Qaeda franchise. And that seems to be growing rather than shrinking. You know, if every place in the Arab Spring has at least one element of the black flag operating in their midst and in some cases running their midst.
Yeah. Let's just go through that list because I think this is really instructive and it's not probably all inclusive, but just among the countries that we know Al-Qaeda is operating in today, either in a vestigial way or in some cases clearly a building, are Iraq, Syria, Sinai, Gaza, Mali, Nigeria, Sudan, Somalia, Yemen, Pakistan, and Afghanistan. And probably we throw in a couple of countries in South America as well. It just begs the question, are we misleading the American people by hyping the fact that bin Laden is dead? Yes. Good on him. That a number of other leaders of Al-Qaeda, particularly in operating in Pakistan, are no longer with us. Good. But is this a realistic portrayal of what's going on when we're told that they've been severely weakened, as the administration is now indicating? Jim Henson.
No, Frank. I mean, the problem you just outlined is larger than terrorism. Terrorism's a technique. All right? Well, that's why the Global War on Terror was always a bad name. It was the global war against Islamist extremism. No one wanted to call it that. So if you look at what effects we've had, yes, we have lessened the existence of a considerable number of practitioners of terrorism. What we have not done is made a significant impact on the cause of Islamist extremism, and it has just morphed into, in this case, political movements, which in a lot of cases are more dangerous to us in the long run than the terrorists. Granted, you can die in a terrorist incident, but the increase of countries that are run by Islamists is a much greater threat to civilization than a few suicide bombers anywhere on Earth. So I think the problem is greater, but in a different form.
Well, and you brought us back to where we started. The problem with Islamists is bigger than just Al-Qaeda. And when we have whole countries, including a strategic nation like Egypt, being turned over to these characters, it's a serious, serious problem. Jim, let me, speaking of the Middle East, we have Leon Panetta there at the moment, hearing from the new Muslim brother, president of Egypt, that they're all in for a democracy partnership with the United States. I'd like to get your read on how creditable that statement is from Mohamed Morsi, but also, if you would, your thoughts, if you have any, on Mitt Romney's truth-telling in, among other places, Israel over the past couple of days.
Well, it was fun. I mean, sure, Morsi, as Egyptian kahuna now, wants us to make sure we continue to write checks. So he's got to say that.
Big time.
He's also fairly well committed to the idea that maybe they'll hold a referendum on the Camp David peace accord and the existence of Israel, since his people want to speak and that's how democracy functions. So, hey, take your bad medicine with the good and the law of unintended consequences.
And we know, based on the recent electoral returns, how a referendum would likely come out, namely, I suspect, an overwhelming rejection of the peace accord by the Egyptian people.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it would be push the Jews into the sea would be one of the ballot choices that would win overwhelmingly.
Yeah.
And it was comforting and unsurprising, I guess, to me to hear Mitt Romney speaking forcefully about what Israel can do to defend itself and what we'll do to not just try and convince them that it's a bad idea, but to help them and to support them in doing it. I mean, I don't think that Israel can wait to see if Romney wins. I wish, if they believed for sure he was going to, I think they might hold off on attacking Iran. I don't think they can be sure of that. So consequently, I think there might be some interesting things happening between now and our election due to the fact that Israel considers Iran and nukes an existential threat. And rightfully so.
And rightfully so, indeed. Jim Hansen, in the Washington Times yesterday, there was a front page story by Rowan Scarborough, a frequent contributor here to us at Secure Freedom Radio, about an issue that you and I have talked about for some time, and that is this notion that the Obama administration seems to be pushing relentlessly to bring women fully into the military, including into the combat arms. You, I know, have taken the position that having different standards for women can essentially create conditions that are, well, unsatisfactory, shall we say, perhaps, you know, very detrimental to a combat unit's effectiveness. The Army now seems to be exploring the possibility of holding them to the same standards. And I just wonder, while you prefer that, I know, do you think they're likely to be able to meet those standards?
Meeting it, that remains to be seen. I think there is a significant number that probably can, you know, more than gets bandied about. I have a fairly high level of distrust that the bureaucracy of the military, being politically oriented, is going to enforce that. You know, I mean, my girlfriend's an Army lieutenant colonel. She had a discussion about the fact that the Ranger School is now letting women in, and whether or not they'll be held to the same standard. And there are apparently 4 women going to be in one of the next Ranger classes, and there's rumors floating around that the instructors have been told to pass them no matter what. You know, I don't trust the bureaucracy not to take that political angle, which would be a disgrace for those 4 women if they get passed, you know, based on a belief that they didn't meet the standards. If they could, if they can, great. If they can't, let's find out. Yeah, no, it would hurt. Trust me, it will. If there's a belief that it is being lowered, it will hurt everyone in a big way. So let's hope they hold them to the same standard and give them a chance.
Jim, in terms of hurting people in a big way, just very quickly, we're going to be talking momentarily with the president of the National Defense Industrial Association about this. But your quick take: the Obama administration says that notwithstanding the law, perhaps as many as 1 million defense industry workers don't need to be notified before the election that they may be laid off afterwards. Your quick boots on the ground, common sense view of that?
I have a feeling that maybe that might hurt Obama if 1 million pink slips got handed out based on the fact that he doesn't, you know, he looks at the defense budget as a cash cow to pay for social programs. So, yeah, having his Labor Department make a ruling that, oh, we're not going to prosecute you for following the laws that say you have to do this, pretty nakedly, transparently political. Shocking from the Obama administration.
Well, shocking and unfortunately all too commonplace now, selective enforcement of the law and fulfillment of the oath of office to, uphold it and ensure that it is properly enforced. Jim Hansen, we'll again be talking more about this in the next interview, but as always, we appreciate your boots on the ground perspective and the insights that come with it as we work our way through these various policy challenges and security threats to the United States. Thanks so much for your work. Keep up the terrific efforts you're making, I know, at the Warrior Legacy Foundation on behalf of our wounded veterans and also at Apsio. We'll talk to you again next week. Next up, we'll get the defense industry's perspective on the games President Obama is playing with our national security. Straight ahead.
Want the big picture on national security and foreign policy? Find out what Ronald Reagan meant by peace through strength at securefreedomradio.org. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, a fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you.
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Former constitutional law professor Barack Obama sure has played fast and loose with the rule of law in this country. The latest example is a directive from his Labor Department telling defense contractors they don't need to warn as many as 1 million employees they may face layoffs on January 2nd. This would allow Team Obama to pretend until after the election that there will be no problem for the affected families and the national economy. It's saying, never mind the law that requires at least 60 days notice be given, namely a few days before November 6th, since Congress may yet act to prevent the cuts. But it can't without Mr. Obama's help. And he's willing to defy the law to keep voters clueless about the nature and impact of his defense-wrecking operation. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at SecureFreedomRadio.com.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement? And how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Red. It's not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Affney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Lieutenant General Larry Farrell. He is the president and CEO of the National Defense Industries Association, a man who brings to the topic that we're going to visit with him about today not only considerable experience in that role, serving in a leadership position with our defense industrial community, but also decades of experience resulting in his arriving at the exalted rank of a lieutenant general in the United States Air Force, a combat pilot with considerable experience in the business end of the national security business. And General, it's a great pleasure to have you with us, especially at a moment like this when, as we've been discussing a lot here at Secure Freedom Radio, a sort of Damocles, I guess is one way of thinking about it, is hanging over those men and women in uniform and the industrial base that supports them in the form of what's known as these sequestration cuts coming on top of about $800 billion that have already been exacted or are in the process of being taken out of the Defense Department's hide by perhaps as much as another $550 billion. If you would, sir, give us a sense of what that kind of cut is likely to mean to both those in uniform and those who support them in industry.
Okay, well, I think first of all is that the way the cuts are going to come down
The cuts right now are scheduled to come down in a kind of a salami slice method across appropriations categories. So there's no provision of being able to have any flexibility in putting all the cuts in one category and maybe fewer cuts in another more important category. So it's going to be kind of a salami slice, and it's probably the worst way to do it. The Department of Defense is going to have very little control on how they do this. That's one thing. The other thing is that you normally don't just cut budgets without some addressal of the strategy that drives the needs and the resource needs. In other words, the Department of Defense has just been through a strategy review, and even though they made $487 billion worth of cuts over 10 years, that was based upon a strategic review of what they were going to do and what they were not going to do. So they made some strategic choices. Well, this cut comes without strategic choices having been revisited. So there's no strategic choice in here. And so what's going to happen is once the cuts are done, you'll have to circle back and redo the strategy. And what you're going to find is that the strategy that results from this is going to be much less ambitious. But you're not going to have the choices, the strategic choices that you would have had before, because the cuts come before the strategy. So in some sense, the strategy, the strategic choices are constrained by these arbitrary cuts. That's a problem. And there's two other problems that go along with this. One is that in past drawdowns, whether it was after Vietnam or after the George Bush when they drew down, or when Reagan had his drawdown, we had coming on at the time new equipment, not only in the Air Force, but in the Army and Marines as well. And so we were able to sustain the drawdown because we had some new stuff coming on. And the other problem right now is that we're dealing with a lot of equipment that suffered 10 or 11 years of war so far. A lot of our equipment has been worn down. Even some of the newer systems like C-17s, we've put a lot of flying hours and a lot of stress on those machines. And even though they're relatively new, they've had a lot of stress. And if you look at the Army and the Marines, the ground combat vehicles are going to require a lot of work. So the question is, where are the resources going to come from to be able to reset and reposition our services after this long war, which is coming to an end right now?
Yeah. General, one other thing that I always love taking advantage of people with your kind of experience, particularly in the service, to discuss is, having lived through some of these previous drawdowns, taking, of course, your point that in the past, many of them were made somewhat less bad by the infusion of better systems and technology that in many cases, you know, dates from the Reagan era, let's be honest. But from your experience in the United States Air Force with a hollowing out of the military, what would you say is likely to befall us with respect to, the morale of our troops, to say nothing of their ability to perform their missions, if we proceed down this fraught road?
Yeah, well, you talked about the hollowing out of the military. I remember very well the hollowing out we went through after Vietnam. And I contrast that with I served in Vietnam, and I flew airplanes there, and the maintenance and supply support in Vietnam for our airplanes was unbelievable. It was really, really good. And then after the war, when I went to Europe, and the budget started to come down, we saw a hollowing out of our supply support and our maintenance support for our airplanes. And so I might show up at 6 o'clock to fly an airplane for the first go in a squadron, which might have 15 or 16 sorties scheduled to go that morning. And we would have four or five maintenance non-deliveries of airplanes. So you spend a lot of time briefing for not a lot of training. And so we went through that all the way through the 70s. And it wasn't until we got to the 80s when President Reagan came in and we had that huge supplemental funding, I believe it was 1980, and we filled up all of our spares requirements in the Air Force, and plus all of our war spares requirements. And the sortie availability and the maintenance availability of all of our systems went way up, and we were able to train. So you got to keep in mind is what makes us a world-class military is the fact that we not only have the world-class people and world-class equipment, but we train probably better than anybody else in the world, maybe with the possible exception of the Israelis. They probably train as well as we do. But a troop, let's say a young pilot, his job or her job is to fly airplanes, and if they show up day after day at the squadron and the planes aren't delivered, they get kind of discouraged about this. Not a lot of fun standing around talking about training. You got to do training.
Yeah, to say nothing of your proficiency in actually performing the mission. General, let me turn to the other part of this, the business part, I guess, if you will, of the defense industrial capabilities of this country, and that are very much in the crosshairs at the moment as a result of these sequestration cuts. As you know, there's been estimates that as many as a million highly paid, many of them at least highly skilled jobs, difficult to replace jobs, will be lost if this next round of over $500 billion is in fact extracted in the manner that you've discussed. The Labor Department yesterday promulgated guidance to the defense industry that it needn't pay any attention to the law that requires them to notify personnel if they're going to be at risk of this kind of layoff. What does that mean, as far as you're concerned, to, obviously, most immediately, the people who are not going to be notified that they may lose their job after the election, until, quite likely, after the election?
Yeah, well, I've read the Labor Department directive, and as I read it, the Labor Department is expressing its opinion, but it has, I don't think it has any authority to be able to direct people what to do. I'm not sure, but I'm just guessing. But if I circle back to your question, what does it mean to the people and the companies? I think a company, regardless of what the law says, has an obligation, a moral obligation, to keep its troops, its employees informed about what's going to happen. And if I were the leader of a company, I would say, you know, no matter what the Labor Department says, I think I have an obligation to my people. But now, the reason the Labor Department says you don't have to issue this is because they say plant closings and layoffs at this point are speculative. Well, I'm not so sure I buy that, because that's what the law says, and there's no evidence in the Congress or at the level of the president that anybody has a plan to avoid this. Now, we're only, you know, we're just a little over 100 days away from January the 2nd when this is going to have to be implemented, and if you don't see anything right now that says this is going to turn around, I'm not sure I'd buy the Labor Department argument that this is speculative at this point.
Yeah, it's smacks of politics, General, I have to say. And I also have to let you go, sir. Thank you so much for joining us. Lieutenant General Larry Farrell, we appreciate tremendously the work that you do with the National Defense Industries Association and your time spent with us. Please keep it up and come back to us again, as this story isn't going away, whether the Labor Department wants to obscure it or not. Next up, we'll be speaking with Roger Noriega about some of what's happening in our front yard in Latin America that should be especially worrying against the backdrop of what we've just discussed. Straight ahead.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of the text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Up in the morning and out to school. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there.
So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with, you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff, like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
To securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. We are joined once again, as we have the privilege of being, with considerable regularity, because there is a lot going on in his particular part of the battle space of the war for the free world, namely Latin America, I think of it as our front yard. His name is Roger Noriega. He is a former U.S. ambassador to the Organization of American States and an assistant secretary of state for Western Hemisphere Affairs, now a visiting fellow with the American Enterprise Institute and the driving force behind a terrific web resource, interamericansecuritywatch.com. Welcome back, Roger. Let's visit first and foremost about something of a bit of a breaking news item, I guess. We've had a controversy going on for some weeks now, including between President Obama and Governor Romney, over whether the president has actually properly calibrated, as I know you have, the acute danger associated with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Tell us about what has happened today in connection with this, a third opinion, shall we say, and what we make of it.
Well, thank you, Frank. General Douglas Fraser, who's the commander of Southern Command, which handles that part of the world, backed up President Obama's really sort of laughable claim that Venezuela is not a threat to the United States. I guess it would have been remarkable if the general had contradicted the president, but so someone arranged a phone call from a reporter to General Fraser, and he says, yes, it's not a problem. But that ignores the fact that Chavez has converted Venezuela into a narco state, that Venezuela provides crucial support to Syria, to Iran. It launders money for Iran. It has close relationships with three of the four terrorist states in the world. It has Iranian companies that have been sanctioned by the UN, the U.S., and Europe with suspicious facilities throughout Venezuela. If none of these things is a threat, then Venezuela is not a threat, but we all know that each of them is, and the crucial support that Venezuela plays against us in supporting our enemies really, I think, ranks it as an important threat to our security, and I think General Fraser just got it wrong.
This is really such a stunning statement, Roger, and I agree with you that a man who's in the chain of command is, even if he's about to leave office, reluctant to contradict the commander-in-chief. But still, even if none of the things that you were talking about were true, and as you say, they all are true, there were just this one natty problem that the Venezuelan regime and its friends in Iran have been actively discussing, and I think actually beginning to take some preparatory steps to put into place missiles, some of which may, at least in due course, have a sufficient range to reach the United States. That's, by I think anybody's definition, a threat. And again, it comes on top of these other really malevolent qualities of this narco-trafficking regime, and just, I guess, raises the question, does this help explain not simply the president's attitude, but the U.S. government's seeming, well, indifference, really, to what is happening in Venezuela as a critical election there approaches particularly?
Unfortunately, I think the political bosses, the political chiefs in the White House have sent a clear signal that they're not interested in dealing with Venezuela. They want to keep it on the back burner, but Chavez is determined to put it on the front burner because of his unrelenting hostility to the United States. Just consider one factoid, that General Amir Ali Hajizadeh, who was the Revolutionary Guard commander for their aerospace program, visited Venezuela secretly in July 2009 and November 2011. Facilities that an Iranian company sanctioned for its involvement in the ballistic nuclear program, visiting facility in Maracay, Venezuela. What's he doing there? This isn't going to the beaches. And I think General Fraser or the intelligence folks should be held accountable for this. Unfortunately, both he and Obama are going to leave behind them a mess for their successors to clean up.
Yeah. Well, their successor can't show up any too soon as far as I'm concerned. But, Roger, this raises a question, and you may have been in office during part of this, or I know we'll be familiar with it at the very least. There was a time, I remember vividly, I'd say probably the late 1990s, if I'm not mistaken, when the Southern Command position was that there really wasn't much of a worry in terms of Fidel Castro either, and specifically with respect to things like weapons of mass destruction programs, chemical weapons, biological weapons. There was really a see no evil kind of quality then, too. We subsequently discovered that the top intelligence officer for the Cuba portfolio in the Defense Intelligence Agency was actually working for Cuban intelligence.
Absolutely.
Could there be something like that going on here as well?
Sort of did her best to brainwash all of the Pentagon in the 1990s that Raul Castro is a great reformer. Now there's some suspicion that they've taken to murdering their political opponents in Cuba. A recent death of Oswaldo Paya is one example, very suspicious death in a car accident. So I think, unfortunately, our intelligence community has been getting it wrong on Latin America for a good long while, and fortunately they take along with them some of the military people who think they know what they're talking about. I just see them willfully blind about the problem, don't have the resources to understand what's going on in our front yard.
Yeah. Roger Noriega is our guest, former U.S. Ambassador to the Organization of American States and Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. And Roger, if I could ask you to address one other country that I particularly a bit concerned about. It's Peru, and I've had a chance to get to know the country a little bit and have been terribly impressed by its potential, its resources, an economy that has begun to thrive, the people who are being really pulled out of poverty by foreign investment and their own hard work. And yet they've elected this fellow Humala, who is clearly in the Chavez mold. And I'm told now that there's a new president of the Congress who is very much an acolyte, really, of Chavez. What do we make of this, and how serious a problem do you think it represents, particularly against the backdrop of what you've said in terms of Chavismo's agenda for the region more broadly?
Well, unfortunately, we have to keep an eye on all of these problems because Chavez bankrolled Humala's election. He made sure that the same advisors who have got Lula elected in Brazil were on the ground in Lima managing his campaign. And, you know, it's one thing if you're a friend of Chavez's and take money from him and admit it. It's another thing when you conceal it. What else are you hiding? And Humala has tried to keep his nose clean for the last year, mainly because you have these terrorist threats coming back up, Sendero Luminoso, murdering members of the military, and he's an army man himself. And so I think he has had to rethink how radical he's going to be in undermining the institutions and security agencies of the state. At the same time, you have radicals around him. You have Chavez expecting that these people that he helped get elected will do his bidding. And frankly, Humala should be looking over his shoulder to see if some of these radical leftists are going to try to make his life even more difficult.
Well, there would be a certain poetic justice to that, wouldn't there? Again, at the expense of the people of the country and perhaps its future. So, Roger, very quickly, and we've got less than a minute here, what would you say to Douglas Frazier's successor? What would you be saying to President Obama right now in terms of the need for a course correction with respect to this Chavista threat in the hemisphere?
I would say that they owe it to the American people, first and foremost, to get the facts, to start to connect the dots, to kick over the rocks, and to take careful stock of our enemies in the region, because they are there. And Chavez may not represent a conventional threat, but we have to understand that it's the sort of asymmetrical threat that we confronted on 9/11 that Chavez and Iran and some of his friends have in mind for us. If we don't get ahead of the curve on this, we're going to be hit, and we're going to be hit hard from this threat here in the Americas, in my view.
Yeah. We'll be watching it, as we do, with your great help, closely, and I hope that your advice will be taken by those who have the immediate responsibility for protecting us against such threats. Roger Noriega, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll look forward to talking with you in the near future, and we'll look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.